All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're into the second hour for this Monday, the 8th of January, 2024. I hope you're very well indeed. Just have a few notes to say that roads that weren't gritted or treated remain really quite dangerous this morning. So just if you're venturing out, do so with care. Hi, Greg. The Galdonna Road pops up again. As a bus driver, I was told it was being gritted by my councillor and I went up with 55 children on my bus and it wasn't. Okay, we'll check into that because those routes are the routes that are gritted are widely available. Hi, Greg. I used to love Revolut as I found it very handy for transferring money to family and friends. Unfortunately, I've abandoned my account as I got scammed and lost a bit of money. I couldn't get through to any customer services and I never got my money back. I found the service so appalling that I now only use a traditional bank. Okay, well, I use Revolut in a specific way, which works for me in that, yes, for transferring, it is incredibly handy. And it's instant, whereas if you're with an AIB bank and an Ulster bank and it's a Saturday, it can take a while to get through transferring from apps with, you know, the pillar banks. But I never have that much money in it. You know, God forbid I were scammed, it would always be for, you know, well less than 100. I've never had that problem, but I do, particularly with the junior accounts as well, I do find it very useful. Staying on the issue of money, we got this contact from a listener and threw it up on our socials over the weekend, and it reads as follows. I was in a shop recently and I noticed a lady to be very upset after she couldn't get cash back. I knew immediately that she was a victim of domestic abuse like I used to be. Back when I was with my husband, this was the only way that I was able to have my own money, as he controlled all the bank accounts. I used to tell him that the groceries cost more. It's very sad to see that you can't get cash back when there are some people that desperately need it and it's the only way they can get money. Wow. Okay, so this former victim of domestic abuse spotted the signs in this other person. And that was one of the little things that change in life, like the getting rid of public phone boxes as well. You know, that would have had an impact in this area as well, because people's mobile phone or landline usage is being monitored. And back in the day, if someone needed help, they could do so with a public payphone or wanted to speak to someone privately. But anyway, we posted that on our social media and listeners responded as follows. Sinead says, this is so disturbing to read. If this is the case, I just hope this lady gets the inner strength and outer encouragement to make the change. Laura said, please keep cash in circulation for this reason. If we lose it, our children will be the ones in this position. All too powerful corporations and governments will be their controllers. I hope this lady finds the strength and courage to break free of her abuser. And lots of people saying how sad it must be if this is the case. I'm sure many shops do cash back. I know one shop that does, if she's ever shopping there. Petrol stations do too. James says, sad reality is that most shops don't have cash to give back. It's nearly all card payments. And a couple are pointing out that a couple of the main stores don't do cash back. And Louise, one particular listener, stopped shopping there. Imelda, yes, it's terrible. They'll try and control in many ways. Finance is a big one. It's sad, but it is true. And Mary says, shops should be able to give you back cash when you buy something. But as I say, it depends on their own individual policies. And I know one shop local to me that will say cash back unavailable, but use the ATM next to the shop if you need cash back. But for the reasons outlined there, that could be problematic problematic for that one person. A caller says, about 5 years ago, when a car that failed the test, the NCT, because there was a dent in the sill on the passenger side. I don't know how that affected it mechanically because everything else was okay. Wow, that's a strange one. I wish that doctors... had more time. I wish more doctors would take a leaf out of the book's incentive. It's about God bless him, he's for the people. Many thanks, Mary. This is in relation to Dr. Tom Black in Derry, who has opened a public-private hybrid GP practice in Derry. He says it is the only way he's going to survive. He believes he will survive, obviously, because he's done the numbers. And that's a comment from Mary in relation to that. We were talking about NCT failure rates. A caller says, a number plate is a major fail indeed. Is it listed as such, or are you saying it happens an awful lot? Greg, the situation in the emergency department in Letterkenny Hospital is in crisis. My husband, who has a heart condition, was admitted by ambulance and waiting a bed from 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday last for 36 hours. When still no bed was available, the doctor fortunately allowed him home, Other poor people were still waiting. The important point I want to make is that when we hear on the radio that people are waiting on trolleys, I and others I've spoken to are under the impression that a trolley is a type of makeshift bed where patients can at least rest when waiting on a ward bed. It is not. They wait on a chair with wheels, which has a rigid, inflexible straight back. These chairs are positioned in every available space along the corridors. Please stop referring to these chairs as trolleys. Then people will understand better the seriousness of this awful situation. Now, I can't say it exclusively, but my understanding was that we reference the trolley watch, but that we do talk of people awaiting on a bed and don't necessarily talk specifically of trolleys. I'm open to correction on that, but I was fully of the knowledge. I was fully of the knowledge that we're not talking trolleys here. Staying with health, why don't they send x-ray patients straight to x-ray? I was in the ED a few weeks ago. Lots were in with letters from GPs saying that they needed an x-ray. They were all wasting valuable doctors' time. They were triaged when they should have been sent straight to x-ray. Well, I suppose they have to mix different people that are going in, presenting in an emergency from GP, and maybe the x-ray services aren't available at specific times. I don't know the ins and outs, but certainly everyone... for everything having to go through ED. Not ideal, it has to be said. Eamon joins us on the programme now. Hi, Eamon.
Yes, Greg, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Eamon. You believe we need to be doing more from a legislative perspective to tackle road safety. Talk to me.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, the carnage is increasing year on year, and there's no sign of it abating at all. We need to have stronger laws in place. We need to have more prolonged sentences, prison sentences. Even the car that's involved in an ugly accident, maybe somebody loses their life, that car should be destroyed at the guilty person's expense. There are a lot of things there. Like, if in other countries, if you see when an accident, you're a driver, you could be charged with vehicular manslaughter. And that's nothing, no simple.
Yeah,
we have to get real, Greg. The politicians, the legislators, whatever, they're sitting on their hands and they're doing nothing. Whether or not they don't want to offend the public, or they don't want to do this or do that, or they don't want to look bad, we have to do something. Nothing is happening to change it. So it's not.
Yeah, but not all collisions, all crashes, Eamon, are necessarily the motorist's fault. I mean, there's lots of us using the roads, you know, pedal cyclists, motorbike riders, pedestrians, agricultural vehicles. Are you putting a lot of the blame on the car driver?
The instances we have had here in North Donegal, most of them, the vast majority, are down to speeding. Really bad drivers. They don't have any sense of danger. They don't have any sense of responsibility. They have no courtesy. They just fly about. I'll give you an example. Within a 2-week period there, about 2 months ago, there's a roundabout on the Cosby Road, Cassie Road, we call it here in Balcrana. And both myself and my wife, we had two of our grandchildren. And there's a particular road coming down onto the roundabout from a townland called Lassone, and some people, they just fly. They don't stop, they don't slow down, and they just fly. A wheel had been 3 seconds on further on a route, we would have been killed.
Yeah, and it's not just this, you're thinking on your grandchildren as well, aren't you? Obviously, Eamon, because there's a huge responsibility.
They just fly through. No, a roundabout, you're supposed to actually have to be made slow down before you start negotiating the roundabout. Yeah. No, they just fly through. And as I say, it's about 2 weeks beforehand, my sister-in-law and her husband were coming down from Derry, and they were coming from the opposite direction. But the same thing, that road from Lassone, they were coming down there and they were flying. And even when you're walking down that road, you see them coming up there, drivers, they have one hand on the wheel, and they have another one on a phone, whether they're texting or reading the text or whatever. They have no understanding what it does to drive a vehicle that can kill nobody. And That's basically what you're talking about.
And I mean,
it's lack of education.
There's some talk about, you know, and I think because it was a wee bit notional that they're not going to go ahead with it, but increasing penalty points and fines at bank holidays and what have you. Would you be of the view that we need, if you're found to be on your phone, if you're found to be speeding, do you think there should be tougher punishments for those offences?
Of course.
Like, how far would you go?
Of course. Custodial. You have to have custodial sentences. People have to go to jail for this sort of thing. As I said to you, in other countries, you would have a vehicular manslaughter charge, maybe set in front of you. And that's nothing simple. Mm-hmm. We have to do something. Nothing is changing. And
well, things are getting worse is the problem. I mean, things are going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, when are things going to change? When are people going to wake up? You know, the people that are in power, the legislators, the government, the politicians, and then hand that on to the guards and say, listen, Gardaí, you have the power to do this. Like, I'm not talking about a draconian state here. I'm talking about protecting innocent people driving about in their daily business.
Yeah.
And that thing about incendiary, about destroying the vehicle, that would cut out mommy and daddy putting the vehicle over to the wee boy or the wee girl and say, there you go. They'll think to themselves, now if this vehicle's in the car, we're going to might lose our daughter or son. No, but we'll definitely lose the vehicle as well.
No, yes, okay.
We're going to have to do things today because nothing is happening.
All right, it's a hard one. It's a strong point of view, Eamon. We'll see what others think about it.
Okay.
Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it. That's Eamon there and his views. Now, we were talking earlier on about from a listener in relation to he has no vision, and the health advice is that you sneeze into your elbow. It's been going on for the last few years. Ideally, it'd be a tissue, what have you. But if you don't have it, into your elbow. Now, Noel, he is vision impaired, so he often seeks the help of a public, and he links the person. And he's saying there could be a transfer or whatever's going on, and it's not very healthy at all. This emailer says, "Hi, Greg. Coughing and sneezing into the elbow is diabolical public health advice. Your guest is completely right. Chief Medical Officer Professor Breda Smith has a lot to answer for. Bear in mind, Greg, the COVID-19 pandemic is not over. The highly muted, highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variant, JN1, is dominant in Ireland currently. The public should be aware it's not okay to spread viruses. It's not okay to put out sick. Their actions could end someone's life or infect someone who's gone on to develop long COVID. Health advice in other places, example, the Department of Health Victoria, Australia, focuses on wearing masks, testing for SARS-CoV-2 if unwell, and staying home if sick, ventilating indoor spaces, etc. Latest quote from the World Health Organization, technical lead Dr. Maria van Kerkhove. COVID-19, it's still a global health threat and it's still a pandemic causing far too many reinfections, hospitalizations, deaths and long COVID when tools exist to prevent it. No one should be coughing all over themselves. Catch it, bin it, kill it was better advice. Airborne pathogens such as COVID, influenza, RSV will spread further and wider than someone's elbow. That's coming in from Vic, that's their view. Might not be everybody's, but that is theirs. Right, OK, we're joined in studio now, on the programme, by Richard Neely, farmer and a Christian counsellor. Good morning to you. Thanks so much, Richard, for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
What's a Christian counsellor?
Well, a Christian counsellor is a counsellor who helps people from a biblical perspective. We integrate biblical principles and what the Bible says into their problems and their issues. The models that we use are very similar to secular counselling, but we just bring the Bible into it, and it's about faith, having faith and having belief in the Bible and belief in God.
Do you find that people with a belief are more inclined to engage in Christian counselling, if that makes sense? Or?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I believe that all our issues are spiritual issues, and the Bible has got so many ways of speaking into people's lives, and I suppose I'm there to facilitate that and help them work out what issues they're going through.
Yeah, it's an interesting initiative or a description, Farming in Faith. It is an event taking place on Monday the 15th of January, so that's a week today, at 8:15 p.m. Where is it, sorry, I beg your pardon?
That's in Manor Conyngham, Community Centre.
I see that. Yes. Right, so is this the first event of this kind that we've had locally?
No, I'm just the invited speaker, but I know a lot of the committee members, and they have been doing this for about 10 years now, and I think the fodder crisis in 2013 prompted for them to demonstrate their faith in helping people by organising a series of events. And there's been one event, I think, every year, with the exception of COVID, where they have tried to engage with the local community.
You're speaking or examining emotional health issues in a changing farming environment. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, yes, it was prompted by a survey that was, a national survey that was conducted by Professor Louise McHugh, who is the School of Psychology. It was conducted through the University of Dublin. There were students that were involved in an agricultural science course, and a lot of them opted for the mental health module. Coupled with that, there was the suicide prevention group that were keen to get some sort of a survey done on this. So it was a national survey where 256 people were contacted, 10 were interviewed at length, and various focus groups were involved in that. But the findings were shocking.
One of them being, and it's almost unbelievable, one in four farmers at risk of suicide.
Yes, and that I think it has been on the agenda now for so long now that very little has been done about it. In May 2023, the European Union had a mental health week where they called it the silent pandemic.
Yeah.
And they're actually comparing it with farm safety. Farm safety is a big issue. Now they're saying that equally mental health of farmers is equally as big a problem.
Yeah, and obviously this was a study on the farming community, but you do wonder sometimes how representative it is of the wider community as well, because, you know, farmers are of the community. What are the triggers that would leave one in four farmers at risk of suicide? What is the what is weighing on them or concerning them, or what is it, something particular to farming?
Well, the top three stressors in that survey was government policies designed to reduce climate change. Farmers feel that they're being targeted, that they're being blamed, that they're being shamed. The second was outsiders not understanding farming, which I suppose really links in with that, and concern over the future of their future farms and their families.
And I think, I don't know how to phrase this, you are a farmer, so you might do it better, but there are other trades or industries like farming, but it's a business, but it is all of you as well at the same time, isn't it? It's who you mix with, it's what your family probably did, and their family before that, and family before that. There's a lot of pride there. And as I say, it's not unique to farming, but I think some of those things are particular to farming, so that if someone feels that their farm is at threat, then they might get a sense that all of them are, the individual is at threat, if I'm grasping it correctly.
Yeah, farming identity is very important. As a sense.
You did it in two words, what I tried to say in a minute, you did it in two words.
It's a sense of importance, of belonging, where they have confidence, where they can relate to people. Then whenever all of these problems, all the other problems, we've only mentioned three here, whenever we talk about weather and we talk about Brexit and the value of euro and sterling and market fluctuations, and I mean, there's so many other things coupled with all of this. Whenever they lose that identity, then what fills that vacuum? And it's normally stress, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. So as a group, we're trying to engage to get farmers to think differently about their problems, because you could have two farmers with the same problem, one dealing with it and one not dealing with it, and it's identifying what is one farmer doing that's different from the other.
And we'll talk about how one might be able to deal with it, or how this event next Monday might help. But do we owe the farming community then an honest conversation about where we're going? I did hear from one political leader, their name escapes me at the moment, that says that, you know, farmers aren't being told the full truth here about, you know, where we are going to meet the green agenda or wherever. Mm-hmm. You know, that there are a certain amount of people in the farming industry that are going to have to exit or be forced out. But maybe we're not having that conversation and therefore not properly helping them in doing so, if that makes sense. So are a lot of farmers battling away a fight that they can't win? And we're not really recognising that because we're always in an election cycle.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm limited to what's going on politically. I mean, I'm a councillor. I help with the emotional issues. But I think the way forward is nearly as frightening as the what is actually going to be put in place, the unknown. And it's just about trying to get farmers to feel that they are appreciated.
Yeah.
That, I mean, food is so important and they're providing such a great...
Yeah, but we can get food from elsewhere. It's like the way I would try and further describe it. Say I was a factory owner with 400 employees and I knew fine rightly I'm going to have 100 employees in 10 years, but I strung along the other 300 for 9.5 years. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even though they thought there was some chance that they could retain their jobs. Do you know, like, I just hope we're not doing that on a governmental scale to the farming community.
I think that's what the farmers are interpreting, that they're not needed and they're not wanted. And I suppose that's why they're fearing for the future of their farms and their children's and the generations. Because, I mean, the identity of a farmer is very much ingrained into the cultural heritage of this rich country.
100%.
And even the farming techniques are very much part. And they're seeing that being...
Pride is a big thing as well.
Pride, yes.
It's huge.
Yeah. I mean, farming is a very lonely occupation.
Yeah.
And years ago, they often said that dentistry and farming were the highest rates of suicide.
Yeah.
And whenever you think of it, they are, because they're isolated. They're working very much on their own.
We also heard, too, more recently, of a surge in members of the farming community using drugs. And particularly now that, you know, you can order drugs effectively through social media and what have you. I mean, you know, could that be linked to what we're talking about now, that people are, you know, trying to medicate their problems away?
Yes. I mean, whenever a person is stressed and full of anxiety, I mean, at the back of that, then there's broken relationships and there's all sorts of tensions within that family unit. And farmers are feeling that their whole family unit is breaking apart.
Yeah.
And to numb that pain, yes, people get involved with drugs, with alcohol, and addictions are a big problem.
Yeah.
And relationships are a big problem.
Right. So, I mean, there's always hope, though, okay? So I've kind of painted a difficult landscape, but it is a reality for an awful lot of people out there. But people can tool themselves up to deal with the reality that we know right now, presumably, and look after their mental health and their well-being. How can people be helped in that regard?
Well, actually talking it out. And I mean, part of what we're trying to achieve at this meeting is, I mean, we're limited to what we can do inside an hour and a half, but if we can highlight that it's okay to feel stressful, that it's okay to feel lonely and isolated, and to encourage those that know someone to be more proactive in helping them, looking for warning signs, engaging with them, taking time just to see that they're okay. I mean, these are small things that farmers can do within the community, and that's the sort of things that we can achieve.
And do you think the farming community is perfectly sort of reflective of general society? Are they less likely to engage and have those conversations, more likely, or just the same as the general population?
I think, well, some elements could be the same, but generally farmers are very independent.
Yeah.
They're very proud people. But I think we need to realise that stress is something that can't be packaged, can't be touched. It's only people who are engaged in stressful thinking, and it's trying to change that thought pattern and look at their problems in a different way. I mean, I can't change their circumstances or policymakers. I would encourage policymakers to maybe take on board the impact of their decisions that they make on the farming community.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what spearheaded the series of meetings in the European Union.
And I just think it's really important that if you can't sort of give people in an industry genuine hope, at least level with them. and say, well, this is where we're going and this is what the consequences of it might be. And I think that would be very helpful, because we're far better as humans dealing with what the known rather than the unknown, aren't we?
Yes.
And also to living with anxiety or stress or however you want to phrase it, and they cross over and they're separate and they're all the same, it's a very tough way to live your life. And it has a cumulative negative effect on you as well. Do you know what I mean? So maybe you might have a farmer who's, you know, thinking over the same problem over and over and over again, but getting nowhere in resolving that. Okay, so you can help, or there can be help for a person to not do that. All right, to better deal with the stresses and the difficulties they have in their life.
Yes, I mean, it's all about looking at the situation and trying to challenge those false beliefs that they have adapted through maybe just the family structures, that they can't do it this way or they can't do things that way. But whenever they see it from an outsider's perspective, then they realise then that they can change. And it's all about that thought patterns. And as I said earlier, sometimes farmers can deal with situations and other farmers can't. So you ask, what are they doing different?
Yeah.
And I suppose for those within the Christian community, and Farming and Faith are offering prayer during this meeting and after it. And I think they're offering numbers so that people can talk with them. So that
which might be slightly easier, because we talked about earlier on the pride or what have you, but I mean, maybe people might find it easier to engage with their problems, you know, through their Christianity or spirituality rather than the farming, but come to the same
absolutely. I mean, over the years, I've had many phone calls from people just looking for advice, what they should do in particular situations. And at least five or six of them were in around suicidal thoughts and people planning to take their own lives. And they just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So it's about educating and training each other.
You find yourself then saying, well, if six did, how many didn't make that call?
Exactly.
You know, and that's the terrible situation we find ourselves in. Billy McMahon is a farmer as well. And I suppose if you can see, you can be it to some extent. He is... experienced depression, presumably he will talk like you will. He will talk about his experience and how he helped himself or how he got help.
Yes, I mean, it's encouraging that someone is able to do this, come through it, and be able to help others. And I suppose part of our Christian faith is to try and be people helpers. And I suppose that's what he's trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And it's only by listening to someone who's experienced it do we actually learn. I mean, he understands a lot of what he's gone through. And it'll be interesting to... I haven't met Billy yet, but it'll be interesting to actually hear what he has to say.
Because there's always hope, Richard.
There's always hope.
There is always hope. No matter how dire a situation might be, there's always a pathway.
Yes. And I think whenever we tend to dwell in the negatives all the time, I think out of this meeting we're going to draw exactly what you've just said, that there's hope. There's hope in Christ. There's hope in having a faith and believing in biblical principles, believing in the Bible.
Of course, that's where you're coming from, but there's also hope in the absence of those things as well. That is not to contradict you, but there is hope for everyone. Yeah. And from your perspective, Richard, and it works very well for you, and I'm sure it will for others, it's... through faith and what have you. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, you have extended an invitation to Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue. You're hoping that he might be able to spare an hour and a half of his time. Why would you be interested in a legislator being there? I think you touched on this in an earlier comment, but just tell me more.
Well, it's encouraging to know that someone at that level sees the need in this area. I mean, these men are busy, and they're busy with other meetings. But as that meeting in Europe highlighted, mental health is just as important as farm safety. So it's encouraging that he's going to attend. I think that will send out a message.
Is he going to attend?
I think he's planning to attend.
Lovely. That'd be good.
Only if he's called away on urgent business.
Yeah, but up to now, you have a penciled-in commitment.
Yes. And that's nice, and he'll be made very welcome.
Yeah.
Yes, policymakers need to see what's going on the ground and the effects of their decisions.
Okay. Well, everybody is welcome. It is a meeting taking place next Monday. Now, everyone's very busy, of course, but we hope you take some time out of your busy day or maybe start planning now that would allow you a couple of hours from 8:15 p.m. next Monday in the Manor Cunningham Community Centre. Speakers include Billy McMahon, as we mentioned, a farmer, and he's going to talk of his experience of depression, and Richard, who we've been listening to, Richard McNeely, sorry, I think I dropped the mic when I was introducing my apologies, Richard. Richard McNeely, who's a farmer and a Christian counsellor, who will examine emotional health issues in a changing farming environment. And everyone is welcome, is the message, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And maybe if you want to send us a reminder, we'll give it an announcement next Monday. Anything, any initiative that helps to support people in these challenging times. So just to remember that a survey by Professor Louise McHugh found that 24.3% of farmers were at risk of suicide. So there's a huge concern about the mental health issues of farmers, and it's been described too as a pandemic. Okay, Richard McNeely, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Greg.
A brief chat with Sinn Féin Finance spokesperson, Deputy Piers Doherty. Thanks for your time. I know you're busy this morning, Piers. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Reported at the weekend that your party has been forced to restate its accounts after failing to account for more than €630,000 in deferred tax liabilities on a 2.5 million property portfolio. What happened here?
Well, first of all, we weren't forced to do anything. That's the fact. We made that clear to the Irish Independent. We also made it clear to them that as part of the financial report, and this is accountancy practices, when you revalue your property, you have to include a level of deferred tax. This is the first time that we've had a professional revaluation of our property since 2015. And you carry then a deferred tax. Now, that deferred tax doesn't mean you owe the tax. Just let's be clear to all your listeners. This isn't the case that we owe revenue, any tax or anything out there. What it means is that if you sold your head offices, so we've a head office in Belfast, we've a head office in Dublin, if you sold them, then tax would be due. And what would be the tax that would be due if you sold the property, capital gains tax? We're not selling our property, but for an accountancy point of view, you have to include it anyway after a revaluation. So when the property increases in value, as it has over time, then therefore, the value is increased, therefore the tax liability is increased. So you have to reflect that in this year's accounts, which we did. But when you produce a year's accounts, Greg, you also give last year's table alongside it as a comparison. So therefore, you have to extrapolate what it would be last year, even though the valuation only happened this year. That's normal accountancy practice. The Irish Independent, when we pointed out to them, Fine Gael did exactly the same in 2018. The Irish Independent didn't run a story at the time, didn't run any headlines at the time, saying Fine Gael made an error, as far as I know. But that is exactly what Fine Gael had to do as well. They had to restate their accounts for 2017 when they revalued their property professionally in 2018. So, you know, that's what happened. So.
And is the story here then, from your perspective, how this story has been framed then? Because presumably the Independent had access to your comments prior to framing it as a...
In fairness to the Independent, they carried our comments, and they also made the point. They also made the point in the article that Fine Gael had to do this in 2018. So, in fairness, they've carried all of that, and that's what good journalism does. The Irish Independent can write whatever they want. It's their entitlement. They have an editorial. They have a view that this is a new story. A lot of people will only look at the headlines, you know, and especially on social media, they look at the headlines, and you know. And then they won't read any further and actually say, well, this is actually what happens. And that's what happened. It happened in 2018 with Fine Gael. It happened with us. Now it's a reflection of the fact that the property has increased in value. It's a reflection that it's deferred tax. It's not tax at all. We don't owe anything to the revenue officials. This is what's called deferred tax, uh-huh. And it's called a timing issue. And it means if you sold your property in the morning, if we sold all our properties in the morning, the three buildings that are included in our annual statements, then this tax would be due. But that's what's required.
Obviously at the weekend, another favourable poll for Sinn Féin, an opinion poll. When do you think the next election will be? What's your gut feeling?
Well, I hope it's this year. I really do hope it's this year. And look, like you say, everybody will tell you, politicians will say, you know, the polls are the most important one of the day. But like most politicians do look at polls and look at sentiment and look at where people are at and all the rest. And the key thing is not to look at one poll in isolation, but where is the trend and where are things happening? And look, we've been very honoured that the public, according to the opinion polls since the last general election, have more and more have said that they want to Sinn Féin to represent them. We also see from this poll that more and more people want Sinn Féin to lead the next government than the existing government. That gives us heart as we go into 2014. We are going to face the local European Uachtaráin Gaeltacht elections, Shannon by-elections, and hopefully general elections as well this year. So this is going to be a big year for people to make the change. And, and look, our job is to get ready for that, to make sure we're you know, selecting our candidates, that we have the team, that we have the policies in place, and that we continue to win over hearts and minds of the Irish public. And we take absolutely nothing for granted. We know, and we've seen it in the last election, how the support for Sinn Féin grew during the election campaign because people really resonated what Mary Lou McDonald was saying.
A lot of that is born from anger at this government. I mean, if as the reality dawns for that a strong possibility that the way Sinn Féin can lead a government is coalescing with Fianna Fáil, do you think that might start working against you?
Well, I don't agree with the premises of your point, in fairness, Greg, and I understand it's a valid point from your point of view, but like, when we fought the last election and we took 23% of the vote, like a lot of the commentators, a lot of the establishment, you know, were saying, ah, this is a protest vote, this is an angry vote and all the rest. And, you know, it'll dissipate and, you know, we'll have local, you know, we'll have other, it'll go away and all the rest. 4 years later, actually, that vote has grown. That vote has increased, you know, to what we see in the polls at the weekend. 30%, other polls had them higher in last year. So, like, and look, we're out about our community. Like, the most common thing that somebody says to me is, when are you getting them out? They want this government gone. And, like, that is an anger at the government. There is I feel a sense, and it's not everybody. There's people in this county that vote Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and they're absolutely entitled to do so, and they believe that they have their best interests at heart, and that's fine. And there's good people in all of those parties. But I see people who are seeing their kids feel that they have no future here, and they're away to Australia. Like, you know, what was Christmas like? People coming back from Australia and all the rest, but they're gone again. Oh, all God. Our young people, it's heartbreaking in our communities. Look at what's happened in our hospitals. Look at the fact that the levels of homelessness, like a national scandal, and it just nearly passes by. Now, 4,000 children, over 4,000 children now in emergency accommodation during Christmas. That is absolutely appalling, and I think that's why people think they've had their time. Fine Gael's been there for 13 years. Fianna Fáil supported this government for the last 8 years. You know, their time's up. And I think that there will be a huge weight of responsibility if we are in a position to form the next government to actually make sure that we deliver the change that we believe that we can bring about.
Right, we shall see. We'll look forward to teasing out those issues further. Thank you very much indeed for that. That's Deputy Piers Doherty there. A caller says, Greg, I'm concerned about the number of teenagers that go missing in Donegal. It happens a lot. Thank God they're finally located, but I'm wondering, is it a fad or a Facebook thing, or what's happening too often? And going back a few years, I never heard of it. This is just my view. Thank you for reading. I appreciate it. Look, I don't know the ins and outs of it, and I'm not talking about any cases that are ongoing at the moment, but I will say that there are I don't know how to phrase this correctly, that maybe sometimes there is from a care facility or what have you, maybe they're not originally from here. You know, there's lots of different variables as to why that might happen. If there's anything happening on social media, I don't know. I don't know what the story is there. I haven't seen it or come across it. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but thankfully, for the most part, the majority, the overwhelming majority of young people that go missing are found in the next day or the next day or two. Right, okay, we're going to take a break for the news. So stay right with us because, as I say, we're going to be back with news with Michaela and a full hour to keep you informed and entertained before noon.